Hi folks, welcome to the second edition of the podcast. We still haven't given it a name, but we're continuing with the aim of speaking to practitioners and hearing about their challenges and successes. So a couple of weeks ago, I spoke with Mark Littlefair, who is the IT Service Delivery Manager at BTG PLC. Mark gave a fantastic session on automation at the Hornbill Insights event a couple of months ago. It was such a great session that it left all of our customers chomping at the bit to get started with automation. Sadly, Mark's introduction didn't record for the podcast, so we begin rather abruptly with me asking Mark some questions. But there's pure gold within the answers that he gives, so I hope you enjoy our chat just as much as I did. So you decided that you're going to automate lots of stuff.
Yeah.
What drove that decision?
I'd say it probably boils down to the fact that inherently I'm lazy. I don't like repeating myself. And I don't see any value in people doing the same thing over and over again. If there's a way that you can automate the task and make it happen without anyone's input, that means you can take them away from doing that and put them on something more valuable.
Precisely.
Ultimately, everything that we've gone through the steps of automating is, to us, low value. It's repetitive. There's no point paying a salary to someone to do that.
No. So the thing is that, the things that you list as kind of consuming your time is joiners, new joiners, labourers, user updates, access requests, software requests, and standard changes.
Yep.
So that's kind of covers pretty much.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, a software request comes in. All that happens is one of the technicians will either get off their backside, walk over to the person's desk, or if they're a remote member of staff, they'll remote onto their PC, go to where the install lives, kick it off, and then log in with their admin credentials in order to make it happen.
To deploy the software.
That's a waste of time. It's far more effective for us just to say, okay, this is a non-licensed piece of software, just deploy. And then all the user gets is a pop-up on their screen that says this software's ready. If it's convenient for them to do it, they hit go. If not, they defer till later.
Right.
Much, much easier.
Yeah.
It's a faster service. Plus, it can happen outside of our operating hours.
Can they self-serve that type of thing then? They can.
Yeah, that becomes a self-serve element.
Right.
So there's no IT interaction. Someone can sit down and do it at midday on a Sunday when there's no one from IT online,
right?
And they can still get what they need.
Right. What about if it's a licensed piece of software? It just needs an approval.
It needs an approval. So that fires through Hornbill's approval to us, and inevitably, we are ultimately on call at weekends, so we'll see it.
Right.
Occasionally, we'll just go done,
click,
tap the button, job done. So the IT involvement's been 3 seconds, kind of thing.
Right. That's fairly straightforward. I had a note here because your presentation at Insights.
Yeah.
You're just basically saying 2017-18.
Yeah.
576 new joiner requests.
Yep.
933 account updates.
Yep.
And 581 labors.
Yep.
We'll say just take one of those, for example, say a new joiner or an account update even.
Yep.
What kind of time are we saving with each one of those kind of activities?
Okay, so an account update is probably the smallest one. Something trivial, job title change. That comes through the HR system. It goes into the platform, that goes to HR, and they yes or no it.
Right.
If they say yes, we literally just get the ticket passed across to us. The integration node kicks up, fires into our Microsoft Orchestrator, and then picks up a runbook, goes ahead, processes the job title based on what they've entered into
just
the ticket,
it.
And closes it out.
Right.
So that's, realistically, that saves us a minute, just to log on and make the change.
Sure.
The value for us, I'd say, probably comes more in the lever.
Right.
Although the lever process is actually fairly straightforward, this gives us a element of, we know categorically that the lever date that's been entered in there, that account will be turned off.
Yeah.
There's no waiting for human interaction to come and do it. If someone's terminated, HR have the confidence that when they put that request in, that account is immediately deactivated. They're not having to wait for our standard SLA of, potentially 15, 20 minutes of someone coming on scene and going, I better go and turn that account off.
Right.
It just happens.
Yeah.
Gives us peace of mind, takes the security boxes.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the process that goes forward, that saves us time. But for us, we want to make sure that we're protected as a business.
So from a client compliance perspective, I presume it's pretty good as well.
Yeah.
Because
that's the main piece for us.
Right.
It's the compliance piece. It ticks that box immediately.
Okay, right, that's fantastic. So what about new joiners? What kind of stuff are you doing there?
So with new joiners, we were at a point where we had, I'd say, too many chefs. involved right. in this one. So you have HR who are doing their data entry. They do, you know, this is the person's name, job title, line manager, blah, 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 all the way through. That was then being transferred across to us into, in the sense of a ticket. We would then go and do effectively exactly the same thing again, right. but updating our system.
Yeah.
We'd say, this is who they are, this is who they report to, blah, blah, blah. We would then pick that information up, put that into another note that we send across the line manager and ask them to confirm all the details, sit around, wait for that to come back, provision some kit for them.
Yeah.
Large amount of time gets consumed, potentially waiting for stuff to happen. There was also compliance kicks into it because we had the risk of someone just sitting there, touch typing away, putting in the details, comes through wrong.
Yeah.
Admittedly, we still have that, but there's only one person doing it, so reduce the amount that can happen.
Sure.
But now the way we do it is we've got one point of entry, and that is HR effectively copying the information off the person's online CV, pasting it into their platform updates, our platform updates as an active directory.
Right.
The line manager automatically gets notified.
Wow.
The line manager automatically gets chased as well,
right?
Which is kind of a key thing. So we're not wasting time going, has this person replied to us? The system's doing it. So we only get notified once it's been completed.
Once it's been done, yeah.
And we just verify, okay, they want a laptop, iPad, mobile phone, etc., and go and provision that kit. That's the first real point that IT are actually getting involved in the process, is going to pick the physical equipment up off the stock shelf, plugging it in and starting the build process.
Yeah.
As you go through the build process, because we've defined the persona element, the software automatically deploys onto the machine when that user then gets logged in. The access is automatically being created based off of what we've asked the line manager to provide us the details of. So all that captures inside, you know, a Hornbill progressive capture, ends up in the original ticket, gets passed into our orchestrator, and we have runbooks that make that happen.
Okay.
If it wasn't, I'd say, for progressive capture, we wouldn't be able to do it quite as nice and sexy as we do it.
Yeah.
But it's the fact we can tailor what information we want depending on what information we're given.
Right.
That's kind of the key piece for us.
Okay. So what about doing a runbox? Because you're using Microsoft Orchestrator behind the scenes.
Yep.
And you were already using that anyway before you...
We were using it before, but I'd say we probably didn't really utilize it that effectively. We did it for, you know, what IT want. Which is great for us, but it's not necessarily great for the business. So we were utilising it to say, right, we're going to publish our updates across our estate. Okay, that ensures that we're keeping secure, compliant, and ticking all of our boxes, but it doesn't really add any value to our end user.
Right.
It does, but they don't perceive that it's adding any value. Yeah. So having the platforms linked together and working the way they do, we're actually now making it look like we're adding value to them. So we've given them, like I said, with the software installed, the self-serve capability.
Yep.
So as long as we've got that software in our catalogue, we can deliver it to them immediately.
Without anyone doing anything.
Yeah, and entirely at their convenience as well, because it pops up and asks them when they want it. And adding value back out to the business suddenly makes IT look a lot better. We're not just a service, we're a partner that's working with them to try and enable them to work as effectively as they can.
Yeah, I'd imagine the amount of errors then, I mean, apart from HR and putting the wrong details, I mean, every time you enter data, data is error prone, isn't it?
So, our error rate was, I'd say, probably 1 in 10.
Right.
We've had 3 since we've been running it the way we're running it. So it's pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah, it's how we want it.
That's pretty good. And you were saying in terms of hours, and just looking at user management, the joiner process, 90% automated, saving about, 500 hours over that period of time?
Approximately, yeah.
Yeah. Account user updates, 100% automated, 150 hours. The lever process, 95% automated, 500 hours. I mean, that's phenomenal. That's 1,100 hours.
I mean, the only bit we can't automate in the lever process is actually getting that equipment back and decommissioned. Same with the joiner. We can't, you know, I haven't managed to convince the powers that be to buy me a robotic arm to go and grab it off the shelf and stick it on a build piece. But we're literally just doing the bare minimum we have to do, which is turn something on.
This laptop will self-destruct in 5 minutes.
I wonder if we could do something like that, actually. That could be quite cool to have in there.
If you're in Chromebooks, mission impossible.
Let's have some. I'll have a word with the guys, see whether we can just overheat the CPUs.
Right, okay. Access requests. You're saying network share mailbox, distribution groups, all of that. That's all
That's pretty much all taken care of in exactly the same sense. So we've got every network share that we can get our hands on, we've assigned an owner to. And that's an owner sat somewhere within the business. Same with distribution groups, mailboxes, and they all have owners. So if someone wants access to it, we were effectively beforehand the gatekeepers, and we didn't want to be. So we wanted to basically empower people to be responsible for their own data and their own tools. So now we effectively just pass that straight through to them through a ticket through Hornbill, or if you're utilizing some of the new platforms we've got on 365, its own inbuilt access request capability.
Okay.
So we've cut IT out of the equation. We no longer get involved in that, which is ideal because why would we need to be?
Yeah. And on the license side, I'd imagine that your software license management is probably a hell of a lot better.
It is a hell of a lot better. There are, I'd say, always areas where we can make some pretty substantial improvements on. But for the most part, I'd say we're actually in a hell of a lot nicer place.
Right.
We can actually go back and we can justify exactly why that license was issued to that person.
Sure.
We can see why we now need to buy more licensing for a particular bit of software because we're now involved in, this project's come up and we need this software.
Yeah.
That comes through in the justifications. We have all that in there. And the reporting capability coming out of SCCM back to our asset management tells us, you're at 350 out of 350 licenses.
Right. So
we can't progress any further until we're going up them.
Yeah.
So we're actually being a lot more honest than we were before.
No, okay, fantastic. And you talked about change control as well. Because one of the things you're doing is saying that you've still got a way to go, but you've got standard change about 25% automated. So what kind of stuff are we talking about?
So the standard change would be the things I spoke about before, which we were software. Using Orchestrator for. Yeah. So things which weren't really adding any value to the business, but we had to go through the routine of saying, right, we're going to deploy these updates out. So we now scrape that information together and automatically populate a change control, which then effectively sends an email into the system, which populates out the change control.
Right, well.
Because we've been able to utilize the BPM, we then fire that across to the relevant parties that are going to be impacted. So for updates to client devices, that will go to the service managers. And we would review that and say whether or not we're happy to deploy that to our regions.
Right.
When we say we're going to deploy it, we're actually deploying it to a test group first. So we've got a number of users scattered across the globe who are, I'd say, quite heavy-duty users, but not necessarily the most IT literate. But you can guarantee the second they notice a problem, they're on the phone to someone going, what's going on? They're a great bunch of people to have.
The canaries in the mine,
though. Yeah. They're a fantastic bunch of people to have as your early warning system, because if something's going to go wrong, they'll undoubtedly find it. And we can then progress the change through to the next stage of saying, yeah, go ahead. We're happy we haven't heard from anyone on this.
Okay.
And then Orchestrator just releases out those changes globally. Or we say, no, we're holding it.
Yeah.
And again, it's just a case of rejecting the change control. That then basically stops that runbook running.
Yeah.
And we've got a secondary automation, which then goes and fires off to the guys that maintain all this and go, right, this has been stopped.
Sorry. Yeah. For this reason.
Yeah,
so,
and then we go and do the deep dive.
Then have a review to find out what's actually going on and stuff like that. Yeah.
Which works really well. There's huge amounts more we want to build in to our change control.
Right.
But I say this is an early doors start on this one. We concentrated more on getting the guys away from doing the mundane pieces like user management to prove the value of progressing forward into the more complicated world of change controls.
Right.
Because they are probably the most complex element we've got.
Right.
There are
so how much automation can you push into that, do you think?
Loads.
Really?
Absolutely loads. Things like our firewalls are managed by an external party.
Right.
So all we want to actually happen is we want that change control to land inside the IT security reamer.
Yep.
They say approve, it disappears off, they then make the change and close it all out behind
close
the scenes.
On yours. Right. Okay.
That's one example where we want it to go. Right. We are also kind of keen for things like updates to our global build image. We want that to happen automatically as well.
Yeah. Okay.
So we're getting there on that front.
Yeah.
So the way that one works is exactly the same as deploying the updates go through.
Right.
What we'd have on each of our sites is a dedicated device sat in each comms room. SCCM guys are working on the build. They then say this new image is available.
Yeah.
They then populate out the change control. That bit's still manual. They populate that out. put that in. Again, it goes to the service manager to say yes or no. Yeah. And as soon as we say yes, we want to have that as a test device, that image then gets forced to rebuild those test devices.
Right, wow.
A notification goes out to someone on each of their sites going, this device has just been built.
Yeah.
Break it.
Right.
And inevitably, they don't. Anything they find, they then log back into the system.
Yeah. So it's the same process as before, basically.
Exactly the same process.
It's just a gate, really, isn't it? You've got a decent...
Yeah. Right. But the only difference on that one is when we actually say, yes, we're happy with it, then the switch over to make that image live, which makes that the dominant one and deploys that to the distribution nodes.
Wow.
So it's good. And even puts a post to say, this is the update that's just gone out, and here's the change log, which it pulls from the ticket. So it's good. Again, only really works because of the way the BPM works.
Yeah, okay. Right. So you just basically, the way that Hornbill's technology is working just basically fits quite nicely into...
It does. Yeah. It gives us that flexibility which you don't have with a lot of other platforms.
No, that's true, because you're capturing everything kind of in one hit. It's all within the ticket. You'd have to be sucked out of the ticket and then posted on somewhere else. And give me some kind of indication. The orchestrator side of things, does it take a lot of effort to do those runbooks? Or
depends who you ask. If you ask me, it shouldn't do. If you ask the guys that are doing it, it's a lot of effort. But when they're actually being completely open and honest, it's just an understanding of how our estate is actually put together. I mean, we have, in the process of building a lot of these things out, identified a lot of inadequacies in the way that our infrastructure was built.
Yeah.
So we were very inefficiently using security groups to do certain aspects. And it's given, trying to automate stuff has actually given us the ability to look at it and go, that's not right, let's do a different way forward. So, it saves a lot of time for the guys doing it day to day, but it's also, I think, made us more resilient as an IT department.
Right? Yeah.
It's a lot of work to actually get it in and get it working, but when you do, you just sit back and watch it happen.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where the benefits come from. We've now got the time and ability to work on other things.
So I'm reading straight from your slide here from the Hornbill Insights thing. And what automation allows to do: increase the speed of your service delivery, increase customer satisfaction, improve staff morale, focus on the needs of the business.
Yep.
Third of your tickets are closed via automation.
Yep.
Wow. Greatly reduce errors, more time to develop IT staff, and more resource available for projects in general. Yeah.
I mean, one of the really good examples we've got of it is we're a global IT team, but obviously we work within our time zones where we can. And it would be really difficult for me to say, do you know what, I'm going to pull 2/3 of the EU team out to go on training.
Yeah.
I'd have to say, right, I'm going to split this third out, then this bit, then this bit, and do it all gradually. We're now sending people off in bulk on training courses. Just to say, right, let's just cut it down. We'll do two bits. We'll have one half that work in the office, the other half on training, and then swap it over when they're done. Yeah. We're doing that next month. So we're just shipping people on training courses left, right, and centre to upskill them, because we now have the bandwidth to do that.
Yeah. It must have done a lot for the profile of IT within this business.
Yeah. Massively.
Yeah.
Massively, massively improved the profile. Right. I think my favourite analogy came from a former customer of mine years ago, who described IT as needing to be like plumbing. It just works and it's behind the wall and out of sight. Not the case here at all. Yeah. It's like, oh, hang on, we're doing something, we need IT to be involved.
Right, okay. You know,
we get that partner relationship with the business.
Yeah.
So it's definitely helped us. Having that helps us stay ahead of where we want to be technologically as well.
Well, exactly. I mean, you can't... That was one of the things I was talking about the other day. I did a podcast at Service Transition Group. Mm. And we're talking about kind of the amount of time that gets wasted basically on just heavy lifting.
Yeah.
Just heavy lifting. And what I was basically saying is that you need more time to innovate. We need to look at the technologies that are actually coming our way, kind of thing. But, you know, at the same time, you're juggling the archaic yesterday's technology stuff that most IT shops have, legacy systems, the current stuff for your, you know, laptop, desktop bills, that type of thing, and the new stuff, which might be cloud-based services and stuff like that. And there's no time, really.
One of the best examples I can give of where automation has really sort of helped us out is we have 1,800 client-end devices floating around globally.
Right.
Every single one of those in the last 6 months has been upgraded to Windows 10. We've removed our old encryption platform, put BitLocker on, and we've migrated everyone into the Office 365 stack. In 6 months, we've done 1,800 devices.
Jesus.
We'd not have been able to do that if we were doing, you know, the 500 plus hours on, you know, user management that we weren't doing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that having that automation in place has meant we can on bulk deploy mass amounts of laptops across the board.
There must be much more of a focus then on the business side of IC as opposed to the, yeah?
There is now. We've still got the day-to-day running element, which we have to sort of focus on.
Get rid of that.
Never going to go away. And ultimately, bread and butter, right? Yeah, so I still want to be paid. And that's how I prove my worth is in that space. But we're now at a point where we are more flexible in the sense of we can actually drop people off of doing day-to-day support tasks and spin them onto other projects that are going on within the business. So we are currently working with our health and safety teams on one of our other sites to build them a proper EHS platform. Using New World Office 365 technology that's out and about, we're working with them to make it happen. Whereas before, they'd have been trying to buy something off the shelf and we'd have been fudging something to go at the last minute. We're now actually leading that project with them.
So that's a great place. That's a key point for me, is that if you look for most organizations, what you'll get is the individual departments doing their own thing.
Yeah.
So they are armed with a credit card, I'm off to some kind of cloud service provider, and there you go, can I have some of that, please? You know, what the architecture is, you know, whether it fits in. IT is more of an enabler, and seen as more of an enabler, that kind of should cut through most of that.
It does, and it has. I say for an IT department, we're actually quite social in the sense that we do shout out in non-tech speak to our business. We don't actually really communicate with the business on email anymore because most of us hate email. So we use the sort of more social media platforms we've got around the business to shout out and say, this is some of the stuff we're doing, and we're putting it into a terminology which is understandable to everyone else within the business. Right. And doing that, the people are realising that they can come to IT and ask them to work with them. Yeah. And all of a sudden, things happen a lot more smoothly. So that cloud system that they were about to run out to with their credit card, that probably would never have got through our security checks, they're staying well away from, and they're going down a much more sensible option.
A lot of the stuff you're doing now behind the firewall, but I'd imagine there is an opportunity for you guys to use some of the iBridge stuff that we've got, the ITOM stuff that's coming out.
That would have been a phenomenal tool for us to have when we initially started doing this. But you're right, a lot of the stuff we do at the moment is behind the firewall, and as a business we really want to start evolving more way to having, you know, cloud-based services that we are utilising, that we don't actually manage and worry about. Things just happen.
Yeah.
And we would like to get it to a point where Hornbill is that interface for the business requesting that stuff happening.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things, again, a conversation I had the other day, we were talking about other vendors, and yeah, you got big tool deployments out there. Some SaaS deployments, but you still see kind of pictures of cakes, people celebrating kind of a 60-day service desk upgrade project, and it's like, are you crazy? That's their own people in IT actually taking time off work they should be doing for the business to upgrade their own kind of tools, and it's just madness. I mean,
it doesn't work. I mean, we came from a world where we had our incumbent service desk system was one which was installed on a box in one of our data centers, and we had to manually update it.
Yeah.
You know, and that update was done, I'd say, probably quarterly, because that's when we got the update from the supplier. And then we'd have to QA it and test it and make sure it all worked. But, you know, the way Hornbill works and the way a lot of other businesses now starting to go down that route of having it just happen means we don't have to worry about that anymore. We can focus more on other things. That's kind of the world I see, is an actual self-help world where people can just go and get stuff without having to wait. It's like, we have to wait till we test and deploy this new version onto that.
Well, but that's the thing. That should be, that's the argument I had, basically saying if it's as a service, it should be, the vendor should be taking on all the penetration, vulnerability testing, the kind of, so all your security concerns are dealt with, all the architecture side of things, all the updates, all the testing that we do on our side.
Yeah.
And 99.99% of the time it's going to work perfectly well.
Yeah.
Occasionally, we have dropped the ball and issued an update and then went, oh, shit. But then, But the key thing is fix it. Fix it there and then and get that deployment out so people will be impacted for a few minutes. And that's it.
I mean, one of the things that I've sort of argued quite heavily
not just here but in other businesses where I've worked, is the whole world of a CMDB.
Yeah.
To me, died ages ago. There is absolutely no point doing it. No one ever finished building it. Anyone that did never updated the damn thing, so it was immediately outdated the second they went live with it. And we are now all about, effectively, you know, cloud-based services that live outside the firewall. So a CMDB for me is your internet connection up? Yeah, you're good. That's it. That's all we need to worry about. Anything else, we have monitoring platforms in place that have already picked all this up.
They'll tell you about it, yeah.
So what's the point in having it plugged in? There's no need for it.
Well, we do configuration management, but we do it in the reverse. So typically what you have in an IT estate is basically configuration management is done by discovering all the bloody assets and the software you've got. Maybe there's even discovery of, top-down discovery of services by going in through a URL and examining what connects everywhere else. But normally when that's done, that populates some kind of CMDB record, and then you kind of look at, well, that's what we've got.
Yeah.
The way that we do it is completely the opposite direction. So we have a new customer coming on board. We'll say, we need one of these. It says, well, this type of box, it has to be that type of connectivity, et cetera, et cetera. So we build a configuration, and then that's in our CMDB, and that's what gets deployed.
Yeah.
It's not the other way around. We're not discovering what's out there. So we build a configuration. We know for an absolute fact that that's what you've got. And that, to me, is a sensible way to do
it. I completely agree. I think it is. The way I bring services in is I start with apprentices. I employ apprentices and then train them up and move them forward into other areas of IT, the infrastructure team, security team, things like that. So they don't actually know what half that means.
Yeah.
All they care about is, can I get on the internet? You know, is Office up and running? Is email working?
Yeah.
So they just want something stupidly high level, which then ties into the services, which then is what ties into what the end user sees, which is, I think, great.
Let's say you were working in an IT organization that had done none of this automation, none of it at all. Where would you start? What's the stuff you look at first, and how would you go about actually?
I think I would potentially do exactly the same thing that I did here, which was sit down and have a very, very painstaking review of all the stuff that was coming through the team and work out what effectively we could automate that delivers value, not just to the team, but you have to deliver some value back into the business for them to suddenly go, what are IT up to? And when we can then go and have the conversations with them and say, right, we want to start automating this process, but we need some input from you and to drive it forward. They've already seen something good come of it and they're interested.
Right.
You know, we've sparked a little bit of curiosity with them. And that's how we did it with our HR team. Right. The very, very first thing we did was software deployment. And they suddenly got interested in the fact that we weren't doing this anymore. We were just going, oh, yeah, no problem at all. There you go. It's done. Taken care of. So when we approached them and said, right, we're looking at trying to make the process between our two departments a little bit smoother and try and uplift it, they'd already had their interest peaked. And they're like, right, well, we've already seen this. Let's have a chat. What's going to be good for us? So that, I would say, would be where I start.
Right. So it's just,
and it's probably the same two things that I'd start doing, because I think ultimately they're the things that everyone, doesn't do.
One of the things that we've seen other customers do is they have Hornbill for HR.
Yep.
So what they do is that whole process using progression capture and BPM is all captured within Hornbill. They will probably have an Oracle or something like that that they're using for their HR system, and basically what they'll tend to do is they'll use the data capture from that end, fire it into the Oracle system, but then it gets moved on to IT to provision kit and stuff like that. And all. So the whole thing, if you imagine the process tracker that we've got, see the little heads up display with all the activities on it. A couple of customers have got that. Here's the HR process flow. Here's the IT process flow. Here's the sort leads. Here's this. So the concept being then that no matter what you do, single self-service page, and you go to that self-service page, you say, new joiner, and then the whole thing kicks off and you can see the whole flow in one hit.
I think one of the things that I do find a little bit frustrating is we have a HR team built into Hornbill.
Right.
Actually, we've actually built them everything inside Hornbill. So they can effectively, on day one of being told, right, you need to do some process improvement, switch over to it, and then everything from IT and HR is driven through the Hornbill platform.
Yeah, you'll typically have a big HR system because things that we won't be doing is things like payroll and all of that type of thing. That will be done by some kind of ERP system they're using. What we do have other customers that what they've done is getting that ERP system to do anything is a bloody expensive exercise. You need teams of consultants and all that type of stuff too, and people that can figure it and all that.
Yeah.
So what they've done is basically put those systems remain as they are, but Hornby becomes the front end for that system, which basically, I remember London Borough Water Forest using it to report graffiti around the borough.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't, the SAP they were using for their systems and stuff, and they couldn't have a front end that worked on the mobile. So what they did was the interface to Hornby, that ties into SAP and logs all the requests within SAP and gives them the graffiti reporting capability, which is quite clever, really.
Yeah, it's a good way of doing it. And I think that's largely what we, the way we've sort of put the HR piece in is, Hornby's the front end to it.
Yeah.
The fact that it's ultimately squirting data into SAP, you know, doesn't really matter. The key bit is it's that nice common interface that everybody sees around the business. I want a new joiner. They go and fill out a form in Hornby. It's the same form, same look and form that they fill out if they want to log site for IT.
Right.
You know, it's the same thing they'd be doing for facilities as well when they onboard. So we've got some facilities people on the system. You know, we've actually got them using ticketing systems because like we need this and we like the common look.
Well, that concept of the employee experience, one page, all of my corporate services on there, that's just a sensible thing to do. I mean, why the hell should you have to email HR for something and then fill out a spreadsheet on this, post a form via, you know, whatever.
Yep.
That's kind of madness.
Yeah, but totally is.
Okay. So the automation side, what's next? Where do you go from here? I mean, you've done a hell of a lot more than most IT organizations that I've seen. So
I think the next piece is probably in the world of sort of tweaking change control.
Right.
And getting that piece nailed out. But the next stage forward, sort of beyond that, one of the ideas that I really loved that I challenged one of my guys to try and make was an automation to build automations. And we actually believe it's possible. You know, there is potentially a way that we could do that. So I think we'll probably do change control, see what the needs of the business look like and what the needs of the team look like and move into that space. But we've sold ourselves as being able to do stuff without actually doing it ourselves. I think that's something a lot of other departments are kind of interested in. It's like, right, what is there stuff we can do along that vein? So we might just set ourselves up as an IT automation consultancy for the business.
Not a bad place to
be. No, not a bad place to be. I quite like the idea of it.
Yeah, and the other aspect, I mean, we touched on it already, and I was basically saying removing the mundane and stuff like that, but it must have done wonders. You talk about training, allowing people to go on training and developing people further.
Yeah.
It must have done wonders for staff morale to have to be able to drop all that rubbish that they're just having to do.
There's, you know, one of the things I always say about a large chunk of people that go through, particularly the IT service desk, is A, they want to learn, and B, they want to fix and help people.
Yeah.
And sitting down doing data entry is not what anyone ever gets into that world to do. So we're dropping a lot of the data entry element off. We're giving them the training and ability to actually go and do the next stage, which is help people and fix their problems.
Yeah.
So that's where people starting to dive into, and they love it because that's what they came in on board to do.
Yeah, of course.
And they're not getting, you know, the turn it off and on again task. Actually, do you know what? They have turned it off and on again, and it doesn't work. So now go and figure out what's really wrong with it.
Right. Okay.
It's good. I love it. I love finding a problem and then deep diving and trying to find that solution. Making
it go away.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what I view a lot of the mundane tasks as, is, you know, a problem that needs to go away.
Yeah.
Hence why I'm quite epically over the top about automating everything I can.
Why do you think most IT people just, I mean, it does happen. Obviously, there's automation going on out there, but I would say it's more common these days to find people still doing bloody manual password resets and account updates and provisioning.
There's a couple of things that I struggle with is, first off, people think that you're replacing them, which is probably the biggest and most difficult one to actually say to someone. It's like, don't worry, I'm not doing this to, you know, effectively get you out of a job. I'm doing it to, you know, empower you, move on, and, you know, get more skill. That one you can't explain. You have to demonstrate and show.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people are still concerned that if we automate this, that's my job. What do I do next?
Something more interesting.
Yeah. But a lot of people undervalue themselves. Yeah. Epically. They think, well, this is what my job is. I can't do anything else because I've been doing it for 10 years.
Yeah.
Well, you can. You just need to have a little bit of confidence and a little bit of training behind you. You can go on and do those bits.
Yeah. Fantastic.
And that's what I've noticed with my team. The morale's gone up.
Yeah.
The skill level's gone up.
Yeah, well, but it's the cultural element, isn't it? That's what you're saying, in effect. It's the cultural element, the resistance to change.
Yep.
We've always done it this way.
Yep.
And also, I think the other aspect is that I don't have the time for this.
That is always the way. It's like, I don't have... I mean, don't get me wrong, this took me a large chunk of time to actually put a lot of this in. But my view was, okay, me spending the time doing this is actually going to save this much time for the rest of the team.
Indeed.
So, to me, it's a no-brainer. So, as I said at the start of this, I'm inherently lazy. I don't like repeating myself. So, if I have to do the same task 10 times, I'll just get bored and I won't do it.
Yeah,
and that causes other problems. But if I can find a way to never do that again, I'll go down that route.
When did you start doing this?
I'd say this is probably just over 12 months worth of grind. I mean, the beautiful thing is once you start automating certain pieces, everything else starts becoming a lot easier. So I think one of the great examples, we were talking about this the other day, is, you know, a lot of us came along to the insights.
Yeah.
Bob was up on the stage there and he said, "Oh right, well, because of these tweaks, this is now how you can do this in BPM world." And a lot of us have gone back and looked at our BPMs and gone, right, I'm shrinking 15 boxes to 3 and making this a lot smaller. Yeah. So we're tweaking and refining. And every time we do that, we're making the automation more robust.
Yeah.
We're making it more scalable for the next piece that we then want to bring on top.
Right.
So initially, we were all on-prem. Now we're putting our automation to actually go outside the firewall and spin stuff off on cloud services for us.
Yeah.
Just because we're continually tweaking and refining, taking little snippets out, putting it into a code repository, then pulling that in as and when we need it.
It's so easy to find that, for that to happen now. Yeah, spin a server up in Amazon or whatever, and
a couple of buttons.
Yeah,
it's literally a couple of buttons. That's all it needs, and literally we can now have that done as a request.
Yeah,
can I have this box? Approve. There you go.
Done.
Box is online. Have fun. Don't break it. Yeah, it's that nice and simple.
Yeah.
That's what I love about it.
Well, like you say, bloody well done, and it'd be nice to get the change piece out of the way.
Yeah, so it's been a few months. I might be bald by then. Yeah, no, it'd be really nice to get the change piece nailed out.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things I definitely say is your session of insights, customers were just blown away by it. And I've seen so many now just basically coming back to me going, I've got to get all the automation stuff working. But one of the things I wanted to explain to people is you've got exactly the same tool set.
It is exactly the same tool set. It is, effectively Hornbill and PowerShell.
Yeah.
That is it.
Yeah.
You know, every single thing, we are using nothing other than, pure PowerShell to actually make this stuff happen behind the scenes. Hornbill gives us the ability, particularly, as I said this before, I love progressive capture.
Yeah.
I love the fact that we can tailor the information, which means we can squirt exactly the right information into those PowerShell scripts and make it do whatever the customer wanted it to do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for those that kind of, I don't know if anyone ever ends up listening to this as a podcast or something and doesn't know what progressive capture is, it's in effect probably a simplest analogy I could give to you is, let's say you go searching, shopping for insurance. You end up on a website. It says, do you want home or car or motorcycle or travel insurance? Depending on which one you pick, it'll give you the next series of questions. Do I want it for a year? Do I want it for 6 months? Progressive capture is the ability to kind of ask a question and then divert in different directions depending on the answer.
Yep.
So, and you're collecting that then by just someone saying, I need this.
Yep.
And then it says, ask a few more questions, and then you capture the relevant information.
Yeah, take the information, throw it into PowerShell, and let PowerShell do the rest of it.
Right.
I would definitely say my PowerShell abilities are pretty woeful. Google is very, very much my friend when I'm doing this. But the only thing that's really helped me is having a bunch of guys who are absolute wizards that just see the matrix and can write PowerShell, blindfolded. Having them and their way of thinking, okay, this is what he wants, coding that out has been invaluable to me. but anyone can do it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And on the iBridge side of things, there's not actually anything to code. What we do is just basically point to the connector, and then you have a set of variables, and you basically say, these are the variables you want to exchange, but there's no code to write at all. Once you've done that, boom, last time you ever have to manually perform that.
Yeah, it's perfect. It is a great setup.
Okay, Mark, thank you very much for that. I think we'll leave it at that, and I'll find out how you're getting on in 3 months' time.
When I've been bought.
All right, cheers.